Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about lore and the games of Blizzard Entertainment. I'm your host, Joe Perez, one of several lore-focused folks from Blizzard Watch, and I've got my stupendous co-host with me today, Matt Rossi. How you doing today, Matt? All right, well, I mean, we're going to be talking about some stuff here, and I'm going to go ahead and throw it out there that there's probably going to be some spoilers, because most of our questions have to do about Shadowlands, that game that just recently released. There's been some interesting tidbits that have come out from it and has led to some questions from you, our listeners. So we're gonna go ahead and throw that out there again. Big spoiler warning: if you're still leveling, don't want anything ruined for you, then maybe come back later. Give us a listen later after you've caught up through the expansion as far as the first four zones go. I believe that everything we have here question-wise ends at that point. And speaking of questions, if you do wind up having questions for the show or the other show or just in general, you can go ahead and throw them on our Discord server. We do have two channels set aside for that, one for patrons and one for non-patrons. We do tend to look for the patrons first, give them a little bit of a bonus for helping to support us. And as a matter of fact, most of our questions this week do come from there. Or if Discord isn't your thing, you can send them to us at email, which is podcast@blizzardwatch.com. So yeah, without further ado, I guess we're going to get started right into our questions here. And our first one comes from our friend Marie. Question for the Lore Watch, probably. Hi, Matt and Joe. This is Marie. Do you think we'll need a new Lich King slash Queen with a new helm to control or eradicate the Scourge? Or do you think we'll just ignore the problem when Shadowlands has progressed, like we're ignoring the sword? Thanks for the discussion every week. So we talked about this before. We don't know if legitimately there needs to be a Lich King or not. We assume that there was, but again, the source that we were told it from is somewhat unreliable. It was a soul from inside of Frostborn, which, well, that could have its own implications in general. The short story that was recently released does make it seem like that is definitely somewhat the case, but it also pointed out that Death Knights can somewhat control the mindless undead as long as they are close enough. So if we were to, worst case scenario, not have a Lich King or Queen around, Death Knights that are around or that survive the ordeal to come could potentially lend a hand in making sure that the mindless, ravenous masses of the Scourge are either maintained or contained, I guess would be the best way to put it, or dealt with at least somewhat, since, well, they don't have to sleep, eat, breathe, all that other good stuff that living things do. So they could probably have an ever vigilant watch, just as much as a Lich King or Queen could have done. What do you think, Matt?
I do not understand why we can't just wipe freaking Scourge. I just don't get this idea that it's impossible. I mean, they're freaking mindless, and they're on a glacier. It's not like there's a ton of places for them to hide. and just get people together and scorch earth it over and over again if you have to until they're all gone. I don't understand this concept. We've clearly dealt with, you know, Thrall even says we've dealt with, like, you know, impossible odds before. We fought the Legion a couple of times now. I just don't understand this. Why we keep acting like the Scourge are just impossible to stop. You know, it's a glacier. There's nobody there. Just blow everything up all the time until they're all dead. We have explosives. We have airships. I don't get this. It has never been an idea I understand. Like, why can't we just wipe them out?
Well, we also have to deal with the ones that are in the Plague Lands as well, which, again, not to take
deal
away
with
from
that
your
after.
Point. Yeah.
The Plague Lands have already been somewhat dealt with. There's less of them there than there were before. Just keep pushing on Ice Crown until they're all dead there, and then move on to the other places where they are. It just, I don't, you know, we just waged a total war against each other for no stupid reason. We could possibly get together that war machine for an actual reason for once. This has just never been one of those things. Also, I the whole we're ignoring the sword thing, there's no way to understand whether or not they're actually in the sword. We dealt with it as much as we could. You know what I mean? What I'm saying?
Yeah, see, like, a lot of it, I think, falls into the category, and I joke about this a lot, but every expansion, I'm reminded of how true it actually is. We are so busy running from one crisis to the next that we forget about the old crisis. Like, we never dealt with what happened after Wrath of the Lich King because there was something else to go run and do. And so we were devoted to that. Had we had been able to, you know, sit down and, you know, think about how to deal with it, we probably could have wiped out the Scourge and taken care of that problem. Same thing with the sword inside of, you know, Azeroth's side. You know, we have this giant...
No, I'm going to be up front. I don't see what you think you're going to do about that. Like, straight up, it's there.
But it's the idea that we're not investing any more time in it like we were before.
Well, obviously they were. I mean, the people who were investing time in the sword in the first place weren't us. We weren't there in Silithus dealing with that. And those people, as far as I know, are still there in Silithus dealing with that. Like, there's no reason that... How is it we're ignoring the sword now any more than we were ignoring the sword 6 months ago? We were always ignoring the sword. We've never actually done anything about it. From the last time we did anything about that sword, we drained whatever power Sargeras had left in it that was poisoning the planet out of it, shorted out our artifacts, and that was the last time we did anything about that sword. So we're not ignoring it more now. We're ignoring it just as much. It has never been dealt with. It was never dealt with once in Battle for Azeroth.
Yeah.
It never has been the focus. And I don't think that's a mistake. It's like... This is a planetary-sized stab wound. It's not like you can just pull the thing out. We don't have the means to pull it out. What are we going to pull it out with?
And you brought this up a couple weeks ago, too, right? Where it's like, and I think we talked about it on the most recent Blizzard Watch podcast. Sometimes when you get, you know, and you see it in movies and TV shows and stuff like that.
Saw it in my own case. I was impaled in the chest with the hood of a car when I was in a car accident. They didn't take the hood of the car. Like, they cut the thing, they cut a diagonal-sized clip and, like, left it in me until they got me to the hospital.
Yeah.
They don't just take those things out.
Because they can't. You'll just bleed out.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, we don't have a hospital for Azeroth. We don't have a place we can take the planet.
Yeah, we don't even know what we can do about it. Even with all of the druids and all of the shaman and all of the healers of Azeroth focusing on it, it really hasn't gotten much better.
Yeah, I mean, they even made the point that they didn't know how do you heal a planet. Like, they're kind of just doing their best. They haven't got a clue what to do. And, yeah, nobody has been doing anything with the sword because there's nothing to be done. It's not that they're ignoring it so much as they're like, okay, now what? Anyone got an idea? How deep is this thing? I mean, that's the other thing is, like, how deep is that blade into the planet?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I have no idea. By looking at it, I cannot tell its scale.
Yeah, we have no idea.
I cannot tell how deep it goes. I cannot tell. Based on the cinematic, it wasn't like a full greatsword size sword. It was, but I mean, that's a ridiculous thing to say when it is that big. But nevertheless, it was in Sargeras had it in one hand. Now, does Sargeras have Titan's grip? And that's, you know, just think about how silly this is. This conversation is.
Does Sargeras have Titan's grip? I love it.
You know, I mean, I don't know how big that sword was. I don't know how deep it has gone into the planet. Is it penetrating all the way to the core? Is it a few miles deep? I don't know the answer to that question. I know that it's like, it looks like the majority of it is above the horizon. I mean, above the crust of the planet, but I can't be sure of that.
Yeah, especially because, I mean, it was crafted by Sargeras and crafted to his specifications, and it could be as long or you know, or shaped however he wanted it to be. So we don't know. Saying
from the cinematic, we can see what it looked like when he used it. Sure. That part we can see, but that doesn't mean much when you're looking at it in the world. It's very hard to get approximate details of on, like, you know, how broad is it? How deep is it? You know, I don't know what there is people expect my character to do about this. We're ignoring it. How are we ignoring it? What am I supposed to do? Go hang out in Silithus and stand there for a week?
Now, the one argument that I will say that I've seen some people make about it is for those of us that play druids or shaman or, you know, classes that were supposed to be working on this, and we're supposed to be like this pinnacle of our order, right? So, like,
yeah. Here's the thing, though, man. I've always thought this about that. There's a comment that gets made when you go down there by one of the people who's there. I think it's a scenario circle guy saying, "What am I supposed to do about this? You know, I don't heal planets. Like the ground, I cast the healing spell at the dirt. Is that helping? Is the planet now healed? I don't. This is not my scale of influence. I don't feel like, you know, if you have a shaman or a druid or a paladin." Going down to Silithus and hitting the ground with holy light is not going to do anything any more than it ever did. Does that heal the planet? Are we capable of, you know, it's kind of like imagining if a bunch of microbes are standing around a gut wound, what are they going to do about it?
You know, and while that's a valid point, I'm just saying I can understand where some people are feeling that they're, to them, this is one of the more pressing issues. And I get it, it's the whole, hey, this is, you know, what happened to Earth? I live here. Like, it's that type of thing and feeling like they can't contribute. But I think that's part of what they're going for. A little bit to your point, Matt, is you as a player character, I think, are supposed to feel slightly out of your depth when it comes to this. I think that's sort of the point of this giant sword sticking out of Azeroth. That said, yeah, I get it. But going back to the whole Scourge thing, I think Matt's right. Like, we could just deal with it. We could completely and utterly obliterate them from everything. We could do a scorched earth policy if we really needed to. Just a matter of when we get time to actually sit down and do it. But,
oh, and something I actually meant to talk about with this question that we forgot to. I don't think we're going to get a new helm because I think that helm is going to get reforged.
Yes.
I think that's why we brought the pieces. Yeah, you'll notice we're using the thing to power the teleport board.
Yeah, and one of the first things you wind up doing throughout your travels in there is go into Torghast, which happens to have a soul forge and happens to have a rune carver just kind of hanging around. So I could see that being a thing.
But I wouldn't even be surprised if we end up taking the swords that the Death Knight made out of Frostmourne and reforging them into Frostmourne. Like, that wouldn't shock me. I don't know that that's going to happen. We seem much more focused on the helm than we do on the sword, but it could happen. And we know that from experience, rune blades, at least, if a rune blade is shattered and then reforged, it's much stronger. That's what happened with Felomalor. It got broken and remade version was much stronger. So if you did reforge the Helm of Domination, it could possibly be much stronger. We're kind of into the weeds here with a lot of this stuff. But I don't know that we need a new Lich King / Queen with a new helm to control or eradicate the Scourge. But we might need one for something else.
Like say the sealing prison, the breach.
Yeah, or the big prison hell dimension that's got to have somebody in charge of it. Because, you know, I don't see us ending this expansion with the jailer and us being buddies. This is not going to be this was all a misunderstanding. You know, we're not going to have a conversation and he's going to have a Damascus moment. No, I don't see that happening. So at the end, the jailer is going to have to be dealt with one way or another. Even if he's dealt with by being, you know, imprisoned again, I don't think he'll be the jailer anymore. I don't think anyone's going to let him be in charge.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. And I think that the Scourge part of it will wind up being dealt with as just sort of a function of what we're going to be doing, at least to some capacity, because everything seems pretty tied up in that. So who knows? But as we move through, I mean, whoever gets I'm on the boat of I think that the helm's going to get reforged. Whoever dons that helmet, I think, is going to start pulling the Scourge back through that portal in trying to seal them away in, you know, the Maw. Like, I don't know if that's actually going to happen, but I'm kind of feeling like something like that might happen, because that breach has to be sealed at some point. We're not just going to leave that breach open. So, and I think it'll all have something to do with each other. But yeah, otherwise, nothing else to really add to that one unless you got something left over. All right. Our next question comes from Jack Jack. Now that we've seen what caused the Arbiter's malfunction, do you think Sylvanas had a hand in it? Was her job to cause said malfunction, or to simply feed them all more souls and thus the jailer more power?
I gotta say, people keep acting like, you know, well, we've seen what caused it. No, we didn't. We saw something. That doesn't tell me anything. A red thing hit her.
Well, we know two things. The actual verbiage in the game says that Denathrius was responsible for the drought. Like, flat out it says that. And we know that the energy that hit it looks very similar to the Revendreth energy. That's what we know so far.
Okay, yeah, but that's less than nothing. Well, okay, it's not less than nothing. It's more than nothing, but it's less than an actual thing. You know, Denathrius has claimed responsibility for, or someone else has claimed that Denathrius is responsible for the drought. Who claimed that?
His son.
Okay. His son has a vested interest in getting us to help him overthrow his father.
I mean, I think we have a vested interest at this point too, though, still.
Yeah,
so.
But that's not, that doesn't change the fact that these are people who lie like it's candy time. So, but it's possible Denathrius is responsible. It's possible that Sylvanas is responsible. And right now, all we know is that, you know, there's a cinematic, there's the red thing hitting the Arbiter, and the Arbiter goes boo boo, and that's it. Until we come back from the Maw, and then the Arbiter's like, which I don't get why. Okay, we came back from the Maw, and now the Arbiter's like, oh, is that Daddy? No, I guess. You know, I don't know what to tell you in terms of who did it. Did Sylvanas have a hand in it? I don't know. If she's working, you know, we know she's working for the Jailer. It's quite possible that the Jailer set something up where Sylvanas is funneling souls through, and Denathrius knew to do whatever he did, which... How did Denathrius do that, if he did it? What did he do? Do you know what I'm saying? It's kind of hard to know what's going on. We didn't really get an answer to anything. We didn't see what caused it. We saw the means by which it was accomplished, but not the actual cause. It's kind of like saying that, you know, oh, now we know what happened to the murder victim. He was shot. Okay, who shot him? I mean, yes, technically he was shot is an answer, but... I knew something had happened anyway because he was bleeding on the ground. I knew something bad had happened. Knowing that it was a gun does give me... I can stop looking for knives, but it doesn't tell me who did it. And that's... Even if you've got someone else going, yes, you know, he did it. How did he do it? When did he do it? With what? Like, you know, if this was the kind of thing that was easy to accomplish, one assumes it would have happened before now. And how come the Arbiter, with all her perfect understanding, didn't see it coming? You know, we keep hearing over and over again about how the Arbiter is the perfect understanding of every soul put before her. Well, how
maybe
come...
not so much, because if Denathrius did what he did, how did that happen to go unnoticed?
Well, I mean, one possibility is that the various heads of the quote unquote pantheon of death, they never bent before the Arbiter.
Also,
I mean,
true.
They never died, so their souls never went before her. They weren't placed where they were. The only one we know that seems to have been put where it was against its will is Zaval, the Jailer. That's the only one that seems to be someplace. So I don't know. This is the kind of thing where did Sylvanas have a hand in it? Clearly she's got some kind of hand in all this. Does that mean she's specifically responsible for shutting down the Arbiter? Beats me. If the thing about Denathrius is the case, then probably not. He doesn't seem to be like, they don't seem to be working particularly closely together.
No, it almost feels like individual cells of an organization, like with their own tasks. Like, here's your job, go do it. Here's your job, go do it. Here's your job, go do it. But this is a very hard question to answer in terms of just the question itself, because I think Matt's right. We don't know. We're still in the process of piecing together the mystery as player characters, right? Like, even if you get to the end of all of the intro quests for all the zones, you get through the Maw stuff and you start doing your campaign, you're still piecing this stuff together, and we haven't gotten to the next part yet. And one assumes that part of that's going to be when we get into the castle of Nathria, when we actually go in there to try to confront Denathrius. And, you know, one would assume that he's going to villainously monologue at some point. But we're still trying to figure out what happened. All we've been shown is a piece of... And like Matt pointed out, we know kind of what happened, sort of, maybe, to like a very limited extent. We don't know what the energy was. We don't know what it was. We don't know who shot it or where it came from. The assumption that I've been making is that it looks like if you were sitting in Ouroboros and looking around, it seems logical that it came from Revendreth, but it could have been from anywhere. So we really don't know. And if Sylvanas had a hand in that, maybe, or she could have just been a player on the team. We'll find out more as it goes along, but I think it's, aside from what we know of being told in game, and like Matt's pointed out, these people tend to be liars. Or at least consumers of sin. So how much can you consume before you become that sin? So no idea. No idea. Anything else to add to that one, sir?
Nope.
All right. Our next one comes from our favorite radioactive lizard, Godzilla. Question for Lore Watch. Holy lore implications, Joe Man and Rossi Bean. Okay. Is the Winter Queen Alun's sister? Just how long has Sylvanas been in the Maw to know about the Primus and his prophecy? Sylvanas believing that she truly has never had free will at all. In all my various WoW expansion launches, I can honestly say I'm completely at a loss of what comes next. Sure, I know the return of our best lichy boy, Kalthas. Kaltha freaking Zod, sorry, in the Covenant campaign, but beyond that, the tiniest of tinfoil theories, though it does look like Forsaken Souls do go to the Shadowlands, judging by the limited walking around in Bastion, Warbrave Oro from High Mountain says hi. There's a lot here. So I guess we can start with the big one, which, I mean, I think we got more messages on this for this episode than probably any other topic we've had in the past over several hundred episodes. And this is the comment that the Winter Queen made when you bring the dream pod before her, when we figure out it's Ysera in there and everybody's begging her to, you know, take her out of the pod, bring her back to life. And she makes the comment of, this is of my sister's work.
No, she calls her my sister's pet.
My sister's pet, excuse me.
This is my sister. Why should I do this?
Yeah, so, yeah, big thing. What did you make of that particular moment?
I mean, what is there to make of it? I don't understand sometimes when people are like, you know, what does this mean? I mean, it means that she's calling someone her sister's pet. It would certainly seem to imply that it is the Queen's sister. But what does that mean to them? She could be using sister in the terms of, you know, Ilun seems to have some kind of dominant control over the Ardenweald. I mean, not over Ardenweald, over the Emerald Dream, in much the same way that the Queen has over Ardenweald. They could be that kind of mirroring force. They could literally be sisters. Ilun could be one of these pantheon, just not a death one, but these beings are extremely powerful. Her opposite number is life. I mean, we know that these are like they are to death what the Titans are to order. There could be a whole group of them of life. Ilun could be one of them. I mean, we really don't know. We just know that the Winter Queen said, my sister's, and that certainly does seem to imply something, but it does not necessarily come right out and state exactly.
Although, interestingly enough, one of the things that was pointed out to me when I was talking about this with somebody over the last couple days is that the pantheon, the remaining pantheon, when there's a scene where you all talk basically in the chamber, Arbiter, there's this big thing. Nobody else is referred to as sister or brother or anything like that. It's our old friend or, you know, our friend here or whatever. So people are trying to take that and this to mean that there's a slightly more familial relationship with the Winter Queen, which is entirely possible because we do know that a lot of entities aligned with the Loon seem to be destined to wind up in Ardenweald, whether it's the ancients, wild gods, or the Night Warriors. They seem to have this natural ordering into Ardenweald when they pass through.
Which does actually give us another candidate for who she's talking about.
Okay, go for it.
A&R.
That is entirely possible because one of the, and I noticed this morning when I was going through a bunch of like legendary stuff, one of the items that you can get is an item named after A&R, which could be a coincidence or it could be exceptionally specific.
Well, here's the thing. The reason I'm saying it. First off, we've been told before that Freya was the one who shaped.
Mm-hmm. And gifted Ysera the dream, right?
Freya was empowered by A&R. And it was A&R's power that was used to elevate Ysera from a proto-drake to a dragonette. It was A&R who gave Ysera her task. So if that's how you look at it, if you look at the various Eternals of the Shadowlands as a pantheon mirroring the Titans, then ANR could be the other aspect. It's the Sealy to use those terms. I'm not saying that that's the, but it could. And you could make the case that Ysera is very much the creation of ANR, more so than she is the creation of Alun. Alun clearly, however, selected her at the end of during the Legion, the end of a Val'Shaarah story, and we saw that it was who took her up bodily into the sky. So yeah, there's evidence for you.
Yeah.
I have no idea which she's referring to. She doesn't say it's, you know, my sister, Alun, and she doesn't turn and look at the player. Alun, my sister, just so you know, I'm clearing this all up right now. No no ambiguity, guys. You know? So
yeah, and I'm inclined to think that same train of thought as well, because it wasn't Alun that created the dragon flights the way that they were empowered. They were empowered through Titanic intervention. Whether you want to call it the Watchers as Titanic intervention, which I do. But through
well,
that
not just
power,
that,
right?
The power of the Titans is literally what empowered her. It was,
yeah, exactly.
It wasn't the keepers, that it was the Titans themselves. It was Amonthul empowered, Stormu empowered, Ysera. I think she also empowered Alexstrasza, Vex. So yeah, I mean, ultimately, I it's certainly possible that, like, you know, it could also be Alun. I mean, that neither one of them is ruled out by any of this.
No. And there are some other things that were pointed out as well, is that we've seen a lot of Naru so far this expansion. And it's pretty in your face about it as far as, like, dealing with them. Which, again, Naru are often associated in some capacity with Alun in the players' minds, which entirely is possible that Anne could have been right all those many years ago, and Alun is just basically a Naru, or she made herself right. You know, I'm looking at you, and I see you. But we've seen one in the Maldraxxus Theater of Pain. There's a in the actual overworld, not in the dungeon. But if you go there and you do the arena stuff, one of the combatants is a Dark Naru. So that's one right off the bat. One of the quest lines that we go through when you go into, I want to say it's the Sanguine Depths, which is essentially one of the prisons of the Venthyr, is you're going in there to rescue the prisoner, which happens to be a Naru who's being tortured by the Venthyr, which again gives more credence to the whole idea that the Venthyr have been learning how to weaponize the light for years and years and years, because that's one of the things that seems that's happening in that encounter. And then
if you want to talk about if you are looking for a way to send a corrupt bolt of light to hit the Arbiter, using a Naru might be one way to do it.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, and then as we get to that Naru in the depths, it winds up going into its core form, just like we found with Zira, and then we, you know, wind up rescuing it. And that's more Naru than we saw the entirety of last expansion already, and that's just in a world zone and a dungeon. So things are getting really interesting on this front, and we know that there's going to be some interesting implications with Alun coming down the line. Whether or not the Winter Queen meant that Alun is her sister or ANR is her sister, I'm leaning more towards ANR, but there's a possibility that there's a more intricate relationship than we can possibly. As far as the other questions here, because Godzilla asked us quite a bit, man, just how long has Sylvanas been in the Maw to know about the Primus and his prophecy? Doesn't necessarily have to be there long. The jailer can know all about that, especially because he seems to be on power scheme with the Primus, right?
Yeah, plus, I mean, time itself doesn't necessarily matter, and we've been told that.
Yeah.
It's not a realm where time really, so she could have been there for subjective years at this point. We know from the Maw opening that Jaina basically says, yeah, I've made multiple attempts to escape, and you're sitting there, you've only been captured like a day. I mean, from our perspective, this just happened, and now you're telling me about all these different escape attempts. And when you go back in to find Mograine, you find...
Oh, yeah. How long have I been here?
Yeah, you find the young Mograine first. Darien? Yeah.
Yep.
You find Darien Mograine first, and he's like, you know, they've been doing stuff to him. He's completely... You free him, and you go grab Alexandros. Alexandros has no idea how long he's there, too. He tries to warn you about something that's going to happen, and you're like, yeah, that already happened. He's like, oh, I missed. There's no reason Sylvanas couldn't know about all sorts of stuff, because from her perspective, there's no, like, time is subjective. It can just go on and on and on. And she could have been there for a decade.
Yeah. And not only that, but I mean, don't take away the fact that Sylvanas is very well studied in espionage, I guess would be the best way to put it. So it's, she could have eyes in other places, especially in Maldraxxus of all places. And that's one of the big story hitches, is that, you know, betrayal, and, you know, it's kind of upfront with Maldraxxus. So who knows who decided that they were working with the jailer when and started funneling that information. Like, they literally could have been one of those creatures or entities sitting right next to you when the prophecy was told to somebody else. They could have just reported back. It could have just been somebody standing there like, oh, I'm just the vendor selling, you know, weird trash water. Oh, that's an interesting story. My boss will want to know about that. And then goes back and tells him the prophecy and then spirals from there. There's a million ways that she could have known that just make perfect sense. I don't think it's anything too entirely special. And I don't think it really the time that she's been down. The last piece is, and I believe this is from the cinematic that you're referring to, Sylvanas believing that she truly has never had any free will at all. Possibly. I believe this is the whole idea of her railing against predetermination. But again, I still think there's more going on with her than we know, and her statements seem to be very targeted at Anduin. So whether or not she's telling the truth or playing on his heartstrings, because even in that moment, you'll notice that Anduin was sitting there telling her she doesn't have to do this. You know, everything can be made right, essentially. And she's just going on about how she's never had any free will at all. It could just be something to throw him off kilter or to get into his mind or under his skin. No idea. Anything? Did you take anything out of that or get anything out of that interplay?
No, I think we.
All right. Our next question comes from our friend 6K. Question for Lorewatch. What is the history of the leaders of each of the realms in Shadowlands? How did they come to be where they are? And which one are we more likely to have to take down in an upcoming dungeon or raid? And why?
Well, the Primus seems to be pre-taken down.
Oh yeah,
I don't think we got to do anything to the Primus.
He's a broken thing.
And the guy we like first Margrave whatever that we first teamed up with, the head of the House of the Chosen, he dead too. and I don't know what happened to Baron Vyrax after we turned on the defenses. He seemed to survive, but he ran away. The other houses in Maldraxxus seem to be actively working for the jailer.
Yeah, and those two Margraves are in the Theater of Pain. Like, you see them, they taunt you.
So Maldraxxus is definitely a case where we're gonna have to kill somebody. I don't know who, but yeah, someone's getting taken out. Ardenweald, I don't think we're going up against the Winter. That doesn't seem very likely.
No, we know we're going after Denathrius.
Yeah, Denathrius is definitely someone. The Archon, I can never remember her name. Cathella the First, something the First. The Archon doesn't seem to be a threat. Like when finally forced to accept the severity of the situation, the Archon does move in a positive direction. It just takes a lot to moving. In terms of the history, we know these guys are all really old and they've been ruling these planes for a very long time. And that's basically it. We don't have a lot of stories of this is how it went down when I first decided to create this place.
Yeah, even, you know what I'm saying? And that's the thing, like, we don't know that they created the places to begin with. Like, one of the things that was pretty, I don't want to say heavily implied, but talked about with Ardenweald, if you choose it as your covenant, is one of the things is, how did the Winter Queen come here? And the fairies are straight up, she doesn't even know how she got here. She just was here one day, walking through the forest. And then a soul showed up, and she decided, okay, I got to do my thing now, and just instinctually knew what to do. But, like, they make it seem like even these individuals don't necessarily fully understand how they came to be or how their realms came to be, which is fascinating to me, at least. Yeah, because
there's the whole idea of the Eternal Ones is what they're called, is that they just seem to be timeless. Like, since there's no time in the Shadowlands, they just have always been. As long as if they haven't, they don't know of a time they weren't.
It reminds me almost like the, again, the Titans, right? Like, Amonthul just woke up one day, right? He doesn't understand how he was born, and then he just found other souls and nurtured them. But nothing in the Titans' description says they understood how, you know, Titan babies were made. They just went searching for ones that already existed. So it's almost like that, in a way, where it's like they just were there. And, yeah, it's interesting that we're finding out as much about these zones and about their creation as I think some of the higher ups in those zones, even more than they have even looked into it, because it seems like for the most part, everything's been sort of like, this is just our job. We're just going to go do it. We're not going to question anything. And here we are questioning her. But yeah, As far as any other important folks that we'll see in raids, I don't think we've met everybody yet. I think we're going to keep meeting people. Although I would not be terribly surprised if we see another broker of some import at some point in a raid. We already fight one in a dungeon. In the other side, there is a broker that made a deal with Bwamsamdi who, you know, doesn't want to give up that mojo, and we have to go and kick their little blocky head in. But I get the feeling that there's a little more going on with them than we know at this point. They're even shadier than Ethereals. I would not be terribly surprised if one of the ones we deal with on a regular basis turns out to be a villain of some type. Any other NPCs of note that you think we've run into that we might have to put down?
I mean, you know, we might have to put down every time we meet anything. I don't, like, with the Primus situation being nebulous, I mean, Draka is almost certainly going to be a raid boss, and then probably Vash after her. No, I don't expect it. I don't really know. Like, I do think we're going to, I think if Vyraz isn't already in a raid or dungeon, I think he's going to be in one.
Yeah.
I don't know if he is in one or not, to be honest with you. I haven't looked. So if Vyraz doesn't come back for a dungeon, then he will come back for almost a certain. We've got the one dungeon that's set in Revendreth. I expect there to be a raid at least in one other zone, if not more. Mm-hmm. It depends on how many raid tiers we get, and if we get multiple raids in any of them. Like, if the next tier has, like, instead of having one raid dungeon, has, like, two or three, then I would expect to see, like, one of them would be set in Maldraxxus and one of them would be set in Ardenweald.
Yeah, and I would be very surprised if we don't have one in Mexus.
Yeah. So it comes down to, like, you know, how many raid tiers we have and how many, you know, raids per tier. Like, if this goes the way the last couple have gone, we'll have maybe three tiers total, and, like, at least one of the tiers will have two. Or, like, if you look at Battle for Azeroth, an example, we had Aldir, I think it was called, right? I always forget that. We had Aldir, then we had Battle for Dazar'alor, and slightly before that, we had the something of Storms. The
Crucible, one in, Crucible of Storms.
Crucible Storms. And then finally, we had the Ashara raid, and then we had the Nazoth raid. So if we go with that, if we have that many raids again, then we probably could get a raid zone in a final, possibly somewhere. Depending on, you know, if it turns out that the Jailer is the end boss of the Legion, which we've heard he is, that would. But in terms of, you know, I don't have any specifics. I mean, a lot of them feel like no-brainers. Like, Sylvanas feels like a no-brainer. The Jailer feels. That doesn't mean it'll happen.
Yeah, we can never get to fight Sylvanas, which I think would be an interesting play on their part, but it's entirely possible. But yeah, I don't know. I'm with you.
I mean, at some point, I don't know. I know that we get Darien out, and I know we get other people out. I don't know. Do we get Anduin or Jaina or Thrall out so far?
Not yet. The only one that I can confirm we've gotten out is Bane.
So there could be at some point we have to fight the three of them, you know, to snap them out of it. Like, they could get mind control. There's even a cinematic of the three of them being tortured, isn't there?
Yeah. Cinematic in so much as it's different areas of the Maw where we hear them and hear their interactions. So it's entirely possible that we do have to go get them out. It could be campaign stuff. It could be we have to fight them, which is terrifying to think of having to fight Jaina again after she's been basically stripped of humanity.
Jaina is actually the effective one. I'm not too worried about fighting Andral, especially not that guy.
No, he just wants to use a crossbow as a melee weapon for some reason. Really, really, Thrall.
I don't know why the Alliance is so obsessed with these things. Really, Thrall, a dick joke now? Come on. Focus up. We're busy.
All right. Well, thank you for that question, 6K. Our next one, actually next three, or one that's broken into multiple parts, is from Metal Zani. Question for Lore Watch. Greetings, you Apex Predators of Lore. Early spoiler, we know something happened to the Arbiter and mess up the sorting. I've been thinking there could be any reason it couldn't be any of these. Ysera seemingly getting sent straight to Ardenweald by Alun by bypassing the Arbiter. That's number one. Number two, I had a theory that Sargeras' sword is a soul engine itself, and when we cleansed it, all of the corrupted anima messed her up. Or three, Sire Denathrius used his cool weapon and just hit her. Thanks for all you do to keep us entertained. I mean, sword.
Joe is thinking three, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, just because it seems like he has all the cool toys and turned his castle into a gun or something, possibly. I don't think Ysera getting sent directly to Ardenweald bypassed bypassing the Arbiter messed that up too bad, because, I mean, when we had the Ursoc short, Ursoc seemingly went straight there, and it seems like there are some mechanisms in place that allow creatures to go directly to certain places.
To be fair, we don't know that they didn't go through the Arbiter too, because it seems like everything goes through the Arbiter, even though things are dying all the time, and you'd think that Flood of Souls would be too much, but apparently the Arbiter can handle it until she gets hit by red stuff. She's, you know, fine.
Too much Kool-Aid.
Oh, no. Too much red energy. But I don't know about the Sargeras theory. I mean, it's an interesting idea, but we do know that the Legion is, in fact, aware of the Shadowlands and has even invaded it from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't know what they're thinking about in that one. And now we will destroy even death. It's like, okay, dude, you're killing everything. Well, you kill the place where everybody goes to be dead, then where are they going to go? The universe is going to get crowded up with ghosts.
Although
sticking to our soul engines.
Although I do think, yeah, after doing Bastion, that I think that the Legion only had a passing interest in the Shadowlands because the Void showed an interest in the Shadowlands.
Yeah, there's that attacked Bastion. So, yeah, I don't know. It's interesting to me that the Void attacked Bastion and Bastion handled it. They didn't call in
Maldraxxus. Yeah.
But then, yeah, Maldraxxus has shown absolutely no signs of actually defending anything ever.
No, they're too busy. Having Fight Club.
Yeah, and they've never shown any sign of it. For all that they talk a good game, there's no sign that they actually do their job ever. The Primus being gone might be a reason why you never see them doing their job, but there's no sign in any of the stuff that predates his sudden disappearance. There's still no sign of Maldraxxus actually getting off their butts to defend anything.
Yeah, and I mean, somebody made the argument, because I brought that up, and they were like, oh, it's because they're too busy dealing with their own internal civil war right now. I was like, yeah, but what about before?
Yeah, it seems like their entire culture is based around them constantly fighting each other all the time. They even have like a pit of it. It's just, you know, the first thing you do when you get there is to get involved in a giant pit scrum. So, yeah, I don't know. But I don't know. I keep thinking about Gul'dan and that explanation about, you know, frayed threads off of a single rope. It's like, I don't know, man. The idea of Gul'dan dying twice and going, like, you know, it just keeps making me think about it. Like, obviously they're not going to do anything with it, but I keep thinking about it. Yeah, I don't know. It's probably not that either. I would actually say it probably is Denathrius, just because that fits most neatly into the story as we have it. Because we know Denathrius has been one of the jailer's big agents. He's up there. He's probably more important than Wazala, who did everything to get Helya on board.
Yeah,
and
Helya to get... I was just saying, we still don't know the whole Odin's Eye thing, what they're doing with that, because Moisala makes it a point to, it's a very poignant line in the Other Side dungeon where he, you know, boasts about it, you know, getting the eye for his boss. So, like, I'm wondering, that's another thing, another loose end that we need, that hopefully gets tied up, but sorry, that's neither here nor there. Didn't mean to interrupt you.
It's fair enough. I just, between like the whole thing about getting Helya on board, you know, and with Helya, you now have a way to control the Mossworn. And you have people like Devos who are working alongside Helya. I'm sorry if that's a spoiler for Spin So Tough.
Well, I mean, this episode's got a giant spoiler warning on it. I think we're good.
But yeah, there's a lot going on in terms of all these things. So I think in the end, it is probably going to be some combination of these factors, what happened.
Yeah, again, I think we're probably going to find out more about it as we make our way through the castle, because it seems like they talk about the weapon that Denathrius has in the castle. Like, that's one of the things that caught me going through this time around instead of on the beta when I was doing it, is they talk about he's got a weapon. He's got a big, nasty weapon of some type. So who knows? Maybe he's got an anima rail cannon somewhere. Like, entirely possible. Probable that it was him, but the other ones don't seem to fit. Like, nothing else really seems to fit. And this is a conversation I've been having with a lot of people lately. You know, some people are still on this whole, oh, well, when we killed Argus, it must have done it. But then there's people that show up, you know, in various places that don't necessarily mean that. Or some folks have pointed out, like, oh, what if it was beforehand? Or, you know, what if it was this and that? There's a million things that could possibly have started causing the breakdown. But the thing we know was the toppling point was the Arbiter, and figuring out the timing of that is probably going to be virtually impossible. Matt pointed out already that it's time is different in the Shadowlands. So it could have literally happened a week ago in game time for us, but been 1,000 years in the Shadowlands. Because, again, time is meaningless there. So it's really hard to pinpoint, and I don't think it's going to be necessarily just one thing that broke the machine of death. I think that it was probably already breaking down before the Arbiter got shut down. If anything, the Arbiter was probably the last thing keeping it limping along as it was supposed to. But yeah, we'll find out more as we move on through the campaigns. Let's see here. I think we've already answered this one, so Talus and I apologize. We've already answered the question about the Winter Queen and the Alun one. So if you were something more specific you wanted out of that, go ahead and send another question in. But we'll move on to a Lucid Ire. A question for Lore Watch. Did Sylvanas break the helm instead of putting it on for fear of being controlled by the jailer? What do you two think?
Well, that's an interesting thing to think about, because here's the thing. If she believes she has no free will, if she actually believes that, then why would she be worried about being... If you don't have any free will, then there's no possibility of anything happening other than the destiny preordained for you.
Mm-hmm.
If it's all just going to happen anyway, then there's no problem with letting the jailer come, because he's controlling you anyway, or something else is. So that to me is a big sign that she does think she has free will, and she's just BSing Anduin, because that's what she does. But also, we don't actually know that's why she didn't. We don't even know that she wasn't supposed to break it. I mean, it seems like it wasn't what she was supposed to do. It certainly seems to have shocked Bolvar, who definitely was not expecting her. I honestly find myself wondering if Bolvar let himself get taken out as quickly as he did because he expected her to put the helmet on, and then he thought, great, I've got multiple people here waiting to kill the Lich King, and it won't be me anymore. So she'll get killed, I'll be free, win-win for everybody. And then she broke the damn thing, and he was like, oh, okay, didn't see that. You get that from him, that he didn't see it coming. He repeats that multiple times, like, I couldn't have foreseen this. So in terms of that, did she put it on because she is afraid? Did she not put it on because she was afraid to be controlled? Well, I mean, it depends on whether or not she believes truly that she did not have free will. If she believes that she does not have free will, then that's not why she did it. If she did it, and, you know, if that was not what she was supposed to do, then she would have had to have a different... I'm all ears for that one. But if she did it because she did fear to be controlled, or if she simply didn't want to play along with the jailer's game, like, that's one of the things that, if you believe you don't have free will, you might test it.
Yeah.
Like, what if I do this? Huh? Were you ready for that? Did you expect that? There, you know, go ahead now. Now, how does the plan work? You know, if you think that the plan, if there's like a plan in the cosmos and you're just dancing to its tune, you might be tempted to blow up the orchestra. Like, go ahead now. What do you got now? How are you going to control me now? How am I going to be made to do anything I don't want to do? So that's one possibility.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm definitely with you on that one. But I'm still not in the camp. I don't believe that Sylvanas truly believes she doesn't have free will, at least not at this point. If anything, I think that she's been orchestrating a plan longer than I think we've been anticipating it, and probably to a degree that we don't even know yet. So I think that her breaking the helm is part of her plan, not necessarily based on, and I think it serves her purpose. Matt brought out a point a long time ago, like a month ago, where you can tell somebody to do something, but Sylvanas is the type of person that if you are not explicitly like pedantic about how you like lay out the steps, and you say, you're the jailer, you go to Sylvanas, open the gateway between our worlds. Well, if she figures out she can do that by destroying the helm and it furthers her goal, then she's accomplished the task that you gave her, just not in the manner that you expected her to, or that you meant for her to do, because you weren't explicitly specific. It's like the whole making a wish with the genie thing. If you are not incredibly specific and precise with your wording.
Yeah, if you get a genie wish, find a D&D player and have them draft your wishes out.
Yep.
Because they've had experience with this. They've had genies, they've had the wish spell, they've had to do this. They're like, okay, this is exactly what I want. Without killing any of my friends or family, give me $1 million that I have completely tax-free, legally, and without any negative repercussions to my life in any way, shape, or form. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and...
Basically, find a D&D player or a really good lawyer, because that you need this thing ironclad.
And that's what Sylvanas does, basically. Like, even if she is being controlled by the jailer, even if she's in that deal with the jailer, like, everything that she's done has basically been to her own tune to a certain degree. It doesn't matter if she's been given instructions to complete a task. She's going to complete the task how she wants the task done. And if you notice, with Nathanos in the past, she was exceptionally specific in how she told him she wanted things done most of the time, because she understood that mentality of, if you're not specific and exacting, somebody's going to find a way to do what you want and wiggle out around it. It's the same thing with Bwamsamdi. Bwamsamdi making deals with that Loa is a dangerous thing, because if you are not explicitly specific in the terms of what you're asking for, he can turn around and go, okay, well, I fulfilled my end of the bargain, now give me what I want, as long as he's completed what is perceived to be his end of the bargain. It's just one of those things. Like I said, I think it was her completing the task she was given in a manner in which suited her goal, her ultimate goal, and was not how the other folks expected it to play out. Simple as that. All right. I think we have time for one more set of questions here from Dak Grom. So this is two questions for Lorewatch, longtime patron, first time questioner. Number one, is Alexandros Morgrain a Death Knight in Maldraxxus?
No.
Death Knights don't exist in Maldraxxus?
Yeah. Well, the thing is, Death Knights are undead who are brought back to be around in the world of living. He's straight up dead.
He may be a knight in death, but that's not the same thing.
Yeah, he's not a Death Knight, no.
No. And I can understand why you would get that impression, though, because he looks and acts very much like a Death Knight. But again, it could be one of those things where Death Knights were created in the original image of something that was gleaned from the Shadowlands. Go figure.
Well, I think it's almost certainly the case that the Death Knights created by the Lich King using the power of the Maw are similar to the kind of thing we're seeing in the Shadowlands. But again, we must be reminded, people in the Shadowlands are not unholy mockeries of life kept animated by necromantic power. They're dead.
Yep.
This is where they're supposed to be.
Yep.
This is their place of existence. In a very real way, you are playing a life knight. You are this strange living thing that has come forth into the land of the dead and is wandering around being alive there, which is not what's supposed to happen. You are, quote unquote, an abomination. Everyone's very confused about you. Like, when you get through the starting thing of Maldraxxus, everyone's like, a living mortal?
Oh, yeah, you are the sideshow.
Yeah, they do not understand what you are or how you're there. So, yeah, you're as weird to them as undead is to you, because you're in their place, but you're alive, which you're not supposed to be.
Yeah, and which also raises an interesting question of, we seem to be able to be zeroed in on because we're living. I wonder what that means for the Death Knights that are helping us, or Bolvar, or Sylvanas for that matter, if that's why they weren't able to be tracked. So, just because they're technically dead. So who knows? The second question here from our friend Dakram: if the Ashbringer was a Naru or shard of one, that means, based on our knowledge, when it is corrupted, it is probably a void Naru. If Alexandros is a Death Knight wielding the corrupted Ashbringer, does it give him void powers, or do Death Knights use void powers as well as necromantic? So
he's not a Death Knight.
He's not a Death Knight, and it's not actually the
corrupted. Yeah, it's not the corrupted Ashbringer. Although they do make the comment, I don't know where he got that skull.
Yeah.
And that could be, he could have very well snuck into Revendreth or gone up to Maldraxxus and popped off a piece of the various Naru we see. But I don't think, we know there's something weird. When the original Ashbringer was made, it was made from a shard that was void touched, and it was being used by an orc necrolite. That orc was killed, but in touching the crystal fragment, Alexandros nearly lost his arm. Like, his arm was blasted and withered by the power inside it. And it wasn't until a group of multiple paladins began hitting the thing with the holy light, trying to destroy it, that it effectively suddenly started glowing with the holy light, and in touching it, Mograine's arm was healed. That's the original Ashbringer. That's the history of that disc. We don't know, to be fair, we absolutely do not know that that's a piece of Anaru. We have never been told that. No one has ever said that was a piece of Anaru. It could have been one of the Atamai crystals.
Mm-hmm.
And like Leaf Shadow, it could have been one of those. We don't know. We have no idea what that thing was. It seems very Naru-like, but we don't know what kind of power it was channeling. We know an orc necrolite had it, and that's it. Now, it could have been void. It could have been shadow power. They use shadow power. or it could have been fell, you know, but we know that when it was eventually hit with light, it took on the qualities of the light. And it seems to be definitely whatever this thing is, when it's struck by a power source enough times, it takes on the qualities of that power source. But that's all we have. As for whatever's in that Fatebringer, I believe the sword is.
Yes.
Whatever's in Fatebringer, we don't know. We have no idea what it is. We know that it was made by the apprentice to the Primus, because Alexandros wanted something similar to the weapon he used in life. And as he said, if you got your nickname from a weapon, you'd probably have strong feelings about it too. So yeah, it's whatever. It definitely does not seem to be using void magic. He uses it again alongside you. I don't know what it's channeling, but it doesn't seem to be. But that leaves a lot of options. It could be just channeling raw necromantic power. Absolutely. Why not? Everything else is.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of like dripping from the walls in Maldraxxus.
So it could be that, absolutely. It definitely doesn't seem to be the light. Yeah, the whole thing, it is interesting. A Fatebringer is a very interesting topic, but it is not a corrupted Ashbringer. And he is not a Death Knight. He is a knight. He is dead. He is not a Death Knight.
Yeah, and I mean, and that's, I know that's going to be hard for a lot of players to reconcile, but it's, unless we brought it in from Azeroth, it's something that exists in this world in a state of death.
Darien's right? A Death Knight.
Yes.
And what that means is Darien can go back to Azeroth. Alexandros can't. Alexandros is in Maldraxxus. He's in the Shadowlands. That's where he is now. That's his plane of existence. He no longer can visit Azeroth. It is not his plane of existence.
So hopefully that answers your question about that a little bit. I mean, I know, again, I know it's going to be a little bit hard to wrap the head around of wrap your head around that he's not a Death Knight, just has very Death Knight-like appearance and powers, but again, kind of to be expected with the whole Death Knights were created by the Lich King, and yeah, he definitely was able to look into the Shadowlands. We know that for a fact. So let's see. Yeah, I think that's going to do it for us today. Unless there's anything else you want to add to anything that you've experienced so far, Rossi. All right. So I expect that we're probably going to have some spoiler filled episodes in the weeks to come, as to be expected. But if you have
questions, he's not even telling you about the like six other emails here that we didn't get to yet.
Oh, we've got so many more, and I want you guys to keep sending them in. So as you experience items in the game, I'm sure you're going to have questions, just like we will try to do our best to answer them with and speculate on them. But send them in. Send them in to us on our Discord channel. Send them into the Patreon and Q supporters section. It's fantastic. We love the fact that you guys are there and that you ask these questions. And again, most of the questions that we pulled today were from there. If you're not a supporter, that's, we understand things are tough, but you can go ahead and toss them into our other channel, which is just for podcasts and Q questions. And if Discord's not your thing, you can go ahead and send them to us via email, which again, it's podcast@blizzardwatch.com. We absolutely love getting those emails. And if you are not specific in where you want them to go, Matt and I have a wonderful fight over who gets what. But you can go ahead and send those in. And if you find interesting things as well, I have been told from a very reliable source that there is a metric ton of Easter eggs hidden throughout all of the zones that are very lore focused. So as you're going through the zones and exploring, if you find something interesting, send it our way as well. Whether it's in one of those channels or send it to us on Twitter, that's fine too. But ping us, let us know. Because if we haven't seen it, because we can't be everywhere at once, I would love to see what you guys are finding. But otherwise, Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch. Your continued support means this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcasts, a better chance at having your questions answered on our podcast for the queue, and an ad-free site experience. And with that, I want to thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.